Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Was ist noch besser als ein guter Plan? Die Möglichkeit, ihn zu ändern. Mit integrierter KI bietet Workday kontinuierliche Innovationen, die Ihnen helfen, agil zu bleiben, egal was passiert. Workday, the finance and HR system for a changing world.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Will Bain with you again today. Great as always to have your company with us on the programme. Coming up today, in a moment, we're going to be hearing about a critical election in Georgia and what it means for businesses there, investment, and, of course, the economic sway, well, right across Europe. Which way are countries turning after Moldova that we talked about last week, Georgia this week? We'll be investigating that in just a moment. Also today, one of the biggest names in business, NVIDIA's boss, Jensen Huang, has arrived in India to something of a sort of celebrity reception. We'll tell you about his vision for AI across the country there. And Microsoft gets a first test of its $75 billion bet on the future of gaming as this gets released.
Don't trust anyone.
Yeah, a lot of excitement, not just in this office, but I'm sure around the world as well, as the launch of the new Call of Duty video game gets released. That's, of course, made by Activision Blizzard, the company that Microsoft paid $75 billion to buy in that controversial takeover deal that we've talked about a lot on the programme. So we'll be exploring more about that, how the release has gone down, what it might mean about the future of video gaming too, before we leave you today on World Business Report. If you have already downloaded the new game, perhaps you'd like to get in touch with us and tell us all about it, or if you're about to vote in Georgia, give us your views about what's happening this weekend. You can do so on either of those topics or anything else you hear throughout the programme by getting in touch on our WhatsApp number. It is +44 330 678 3033. So +44 330 678 3033, and you can send us a voice note on there as well if you would prefer to have your voice played out on the programme over the next half hour. We're going to start, though, in Eastern Europe and in Georgia, where the country votes in parliamentary elections this weekend. And after voting in Moldova last weekend, for the second week in a row, the vote in an Eastern European nation is being framed pretty clearly. Is future prosperity better achieved by looking east to perhaps traditional partners and relationships with the likes of Russia, or looking west and forging closer ties with Europe and the European Union more specifically? The BBC's correspondent in Georgia, Rayan Dimitri, joins us live from Freedom Square in Tbilisi. And Rayan, can hear already quite a gathering behind you by the sound of things.
Well, yes, it's a busy evening traffic, Will, here. But just 2 days ago, in the same square, hit Freedom Square, the governing Georgian Dream Party held a rally for its supporters. There were thousands and thousands of people. Most of them, many of them, were bussed in from the whole of the country, from different regions in Georgia. And to be honest, it was hard to tell for me. Like, I was going around trying to talk to people. It was hard to tell for me how many of those people were genuinely here, were genuine supporters of the party that has been in power for the past 12 years, and how many were just forced to be here. Mm. So if the opposition was saying, look, most of those people are civil servants, they were told to come and attend this rally or risk losing their jobs. I personally spoke to one high school student, so not even a university student, who was kind of trying to hide her face. And then I asked her why was she doing that, and she said, look, I don't support this party, but if I refuse to come here, then I would run into troubles. She didn't elaborate which troubles. But saying all of this, there are still quite solid support, I would say, for the Georgian dream. They've been running on this ticket of war and peace, saying that, look, if you vote for opposition, then they will drag this country into kind of Ukraine's war. While we, the Georgian dream, we've done really well so far, so we guarantee peace.
Yeah, flesh out a bit more of that backdrop, Reha. Flesh out a bit more of that backdrop, where everybody is, where the governing party Georgian dream that you've been talking about stand, where the opposition stand, and kind of what's at stake this weekend.
So as I just mentioned, the governing party says the choice is between war and peace. Traditional values, they say. They still promise to take this country to Europe, but under their own terms. And a lot of observers have been saying that the Georgian government has really kind of adopted the Hungarian model. The only difference being, of course, that Georgia is not a member of the European Union. It's just a candidate country to join the EU. And that is what most opposition supporters and young people here, they're worried that they might lose this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to join the European Union, because that candidate status came with conditions, at least 9 conditions. And what the opposition says is that this government, and not just the opposition, including the EU ambassador to Georgia, who has been quite vocal in the last couple of weeks, he's been saying, look, what the Georgian dream, the governing party, has done so far, it has deliberately undermined everything what we've been suggesting to this country to do, those steps to take, those democratization steps to take in order to get closer to the EU. So they're saying they've done everything like in the opposite direction. They've adopted a number of laws that were seen as anti-European.
Including this NGO law back in the summer that we had Rayhan on talking about as well. People talking about that being a Russia bill, outlawing or saying that there are foreign states, certain NGOs and charities. Rayhan's setting the table for us a bit there, for a bit more of a business reaction to, I guess, some of those choices that Rayhan was laying out there for us. Fadi Asli is a businessman, runs his own consulting firm, and he's also the chairman of the International Chambers of Commerce in Georgia as well. From Tbilisi, he told us what was at stake from a business perspective this weekend.
The prosperity of business is at stake, because those elections are extremely crucial. Either Georgia will head towards Russia or Georgia will head towards the EU. So depending on the direction, the impact will be tremendous on businesses. So businesses are very nervous, and they anticipate that hopefully Georgia will be heading towards the EU. Otherwise, the situation will be quite dramatic for businesses in the country.
Right. Why do you say that? Because I was going to ask you exactly that. If there's a fork in the road, why is it that you think, and is that the view of your members?
Yes, absolutely. Because if you look at the statistics, the EU represents about 21% of the total economic activity of Georgia, including import, exports, whereas Russia represents about 11%. So definitely the EU market is a much more important market for Georgia than the Russian market. In addition, it's a much wealthier market than the Russian market. And what businesses are afraid of is that if the current government, the ruling party, decides to rig the elections or steal the elections, then this would be a calamity for the economy and for the country, because the currency will devalue very sharply and very quickly. There will be no investments anymore in the country, and this will hurt businesses very much. That's why they're very nervous.
Clear then there from what the impact might be if this is contested in one way or another, the result when we get to the end of the weekend. We've been talking about BRICS, the Conference of Emerging Economies, all this week on the programme in a lot of detail. And there, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, for example, the president of Turkey, talking about new opportunities, changing way that global economics is done, the changing way that global business is done, and that actually there are new opportunities. Do you think that there are members within your grouping who see that, who think like that, who might think, you know what, actually, to be able to do more trade with Russia, China, India perhaps, some of those countries that are within that bloc might actually be preferable to waiting to see whether the European Union allows you to become a member or not?
I will answer you with an old Oriental proverb that says, mingle with the rich, you will become rich. Mingle with the poor, you will become poor. And that's exactly the situation. I mean, if you want us, you want Georgia to do business with Russia and with Venezuela and with Iran and with those countries, I mean, the outcome is clear what will happen. We would like to partner with wealthy countries so it yields positive results for our economy. So, I mean, I have nothing against BRICS at all, but I don't think that BRICS in the short term, at least in the coming 10 years, can be a real potential for Georgia. Bar China, I mean, that, you know, the Chinese are pretty well off financially.
This debate, I suppose, about which way to turn for the country, both politically and economically, east or west, in very base terms, has that had an impact on investment decisions in Georgia already?
There is no serious investment in Georgia. I mean, the total investments in the country revolves around $1 billion since the Georgian Dream came to power per year. So I can assure you that people are not interested. Foreign investors are not interested in Georgia.
Whatever happens this weekend, it's likely to be messy, complicated, bumpy, isn't it, in the weeks ahead? Are you, as businesses and business leaders, bracing for that a bit?
Look, you know, we don't live in Switzerland, okay? So we are used to hiccups and bumps, and businesses will always readjust to situations. They might suffer for a while, but, you know, the bottom line, some businesses might go bankrupt, some others will emerge. This is how it will go. We hope that if the Georgian government, Georgia Dream, loses the elections, they will not try to come with some tricks trying to steal the election somehow, because this will be terrible. I hope that they will concede defeat in case they lose the elections. And if they win the elections in a transparent way, then, you know, what can we do? We will have to adapt to the new situation.
Fadi Asli there, chairman of the International Chambers of Commerce in Georgia. Rayan Dimitri, our correspondent, still with us from Freedom Square in the capital, Tbilisi. Rayan, we've heard a lot of the arguments then for the, I guess, the opposition side, the pro-European Union side. What are the arguments? Because there are plenty, right, as well, aren't there, in terms of what we were talking about there with Fadi Asli as well, in terms of turning from a business perspective, closer towards Russia as well. What are the arguments that that side are making, that the Georgian Dream are making?
Well, the Georgian Dream is saying that, look, our economy is doing brilliantly. It's doing so well. And a couple of days ago, there was an IMF report which kind of confirmed that. They put Georgia almost at the top in the European continent on the economic growth. So there are many, many kind of figures that show that the economy is doing really well. And the Georgian Dream has really used this argument to tell people, look, we guarantee peace, the economy is doing well, and that is all thanks to our wise policies, multilateral policies. We are developing relations with China and Europe. We're friends with everybody. But the government critics are saying, look, if the economy is doing so well, how come it doesn't translate into the real kind of wealth that people can feel? Because those who benefit from, you know, all these good things are the companies that are close to the Georgian Dream. Those who are associated with the government, they tend to win all the tenders, and then they in turn kind of donate large sums of money to the governing party. So the critics are saying, yes, there are people who are benefiting from it, but it just takes a trip to rural Georgia for you to see that actually the vast majority of people here live in poverty.
Going to be one for us to watch. Stay with the World Service right through the weekend. Weekend news hour at the weekend, and of course back with us on World Business Report again on Monday for the outcome of all of that. Our thanks to Rayan Dimitri, our correspondent there in Georgia. Let's move from Georgia to India, because one of the biggest names in global business right now, Jensen Huang, the chief executive of the chip developer NVIDIA, has arrived to something bordering on a celebrity welcome in the country. He was there to talk about a tie-up with one of the country's biggest firms and the expansion of not just chip-making, he hopes, but the development of AI full stop. From Mumbai, our India business correspondent, Nikhil Imandar, told us more.
He got a massive reception here in India. He was, of course, here to attend this AI conference, which was completely packed. He had a fireside chat with Mukesh Ambani, who is India's, rather Asia's richest man, about, you know, AI. One of the big sort of deals to come out of there was this strategic partnership that they've struck to essentially spur the technology's adoption in India, which, as you know, has 1.4 billion people and is the most populous country in the world.
Yeah, and that's a tie-up with this company, Reliance. For international listeners, tell us a bit about them, what they do.
Yeah, so Reliance is a sprawling conglomerate. It's one of India's biggest companies, as I said, that's run by Asia's richest man, Mukesh Ambani. It has its feet in everything from retail to telecoms, and the partnership with NVIDIA is essentially for a data center that it is going to be putting out in the state of Gujarat, where NVIDIA would be supplying its latest Blackwell chips. And apart from Reliance, of course, you know, they've also announced that they would be partnering with major Indian outsourcing companies such as TCS, Wipro, Infosys. These are all software majors that export software to the world. And in that context, what he said was that India right now was a software giant, but going forward has the potential to export AI as well.
Because India has been very keen to develop its own tech champions, I guess. Has there been much pushback to what's becoming an increasingly vital sector, right?
Well, not really, because I think while India has quite a strong tech prowess in terms of chip design, where we lack is chip fabrication. And to that extent, I think these sorts of strategic partnerships will be welcomed, because India has a huge engineering talent when it comes to designing these chips. But increasingly, what we've seen in the past couple of years is that big companies are actually getting into chip fabrication. And for that, they need foreign partnerships, you know, for the intelligence, for the kinds of very capital intensive investments something like this needs. And the government here has been pretty sort of supportive of something like this as well. They have been allocating money for AI development, and which is why companies such as NVIDIA are interested, because increasingly they also want to partner with countries to try and reduce reliance on other countries such as China, given the kind of trade wars that we're seeing between the US and China. And India, in that context, becomes a strategic and important partner.
How much adoption is there, I guess, in kind of ordinary Indian business of AI so far?
Well, I think, you know, the adoption levels are low at this point in time, and they will gradually be going up. In terms of, you know, who the big players are, there are a number of startups who are using AI now to, you know, essentially service many aspects of their business. And even NVIDIA, for instance, has said that it will be helping India's Tech Mahindra to, you know, build a Hindi language model, which can be used for things like translation, for instance, or AI assistance. And I think that's really important, the fact that it's being done in Hindi, because there is a massive population here in India that doesn't speak major languages such as English. And that's why NVIDIA said that AI should be inclusive, and rolling out these small language models would help address the questions of language diversity, which is very critical in India that has 22 official languages.
The BBC's Nikhil Inamdar speaking to us from Mumbai, India there.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Shanti Kellerman, Chief Investment Officer at M&G Wealth here in London, is with us. Shanti, great to have you back on the programme. The NASDAQ that NVIDIA sits on, just looking to my left at a couple of the business pages, NASDAQ hits record high as tech stocks rebound from summer sell-off. A bit of a boom this afternoon.
Yeah, it's been generally good news in terms of good economic data, having interest rates fall slightly. And that's just, it's boosted some of the technology companies. They all start reporting next week, so we'll have to see what those numbers are. That could throw it around a bit. But in general, U.S. economy is doing well.
Yeah, hold that thought on next week. We'll come to that in a moment. Where it's been a bumpier road this week, and we've talked about it a bit on the programme, has been with car makers, and there were some pretty terrible numbers from Mercedes-Benz today.
Yeah, so shares were down about 1%. They lowered their guidance on how much margin they're going to make again, the second time in 3 months, which suggests things are changing very rapidly in their business. They do about a third of their sales in China, and sales in China were down 17%, just reflecting weak consumer spending there. The other big problem that the whole industry has had is they've been trying to do more electric vehicles. There's bans on combustion engines coming into force in 2035, but consumer demand just isn't there. So they're kind of making vehicles that right now the consumers don't really want. And then you have to compromise to sell them with incentives.
Mm. Well, to that point about EVs, this is what Jim Rowan, the boss of Volvo Cars, told us about exactly that a little bit earlier this week on the program.
It means losing jobs, it means losing relevance, and it means losing a leadership position in some of the technologies that we already have a very good position in the global markets in, and that will be overtaken by other parts of the world.
The China one, slightly out of their control, Shanti, isn't it? But that one, actually the transition in these companies' control to a little bit, to an extent.
Well, it's about how do you make those appealing to consumers? And there's the car itself, but then there's a whole ecosystem around the availability of charging, the government incentives. That's probably what needs working on to make consumers willing to adopt it quicker.
Yeah, we'll have a little bit of a look ahead to next week with Shanti, because there's loads in terms of company results, but also big economic decisions coming up in just a moment. I want to get Shanti's thoughts on this too, because the Wall Street Journal, I thought, put it pretty well a little bit earlier today when it said the new Call of Duty tests Microsoft's $75 billion bet on the future of video games. That is the Call of Duty. It's sort of a military game that's out on Xbox, the Black Ops 6, the latest release and the first since that record-breaking takeover by Microsoft of Activision Blizzard, the company that develops the game, has happened. EGX is the UK's biggest gaming show. It's underway here in London, and gamers have been sharing their first impressions of the new release today.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, I played Zombies. Reminds me of the original Zombies, but also new at the same time.
Quite good, really, the story so far.
Yeah, probably the most popular game here, isn't it?
Generally, I think it's really good, but mostly I sort of just enjoy the zombie experience, just like fighting all the waves.
I've not played it, no. I've not played any of them. I'm very much the RPG type person, so gun games, not really my style.
I think we're all more excited for, what's it, Sparking Zero?
Oh, okay, yeah, no, yeah, yeah. That I forget that's actually here.
No, I'm excited for Sparking Zero, but not for Call of Duty, not really. I don't know, maybe I'll check it out, maybe I'll see if I like it.
Well, the BBC's Andrew Rogers has been at the event, and he told us a bit more.
Yes, we're here at EGX, the UK's biggest gaming show, connected to Comic-Con this year. We've got tens of thousands of people expected over the weekend. Imagine a convention centre absolutely full of fans of games, comics, movies, pretty much anything pop culture. And lots of them here to play the latest games. One of those, launching today, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, the latest one. And to talk to us about it, we've got Chris Dring, the head of GamesIndustry.biz.
Hello.
Why is this launch in particular such a big deal?
Well, Call of Duty is always one of the biggest video game launches of the year anyway. It is, you know, tens of millions of players play it every year, and they play it all the time, so they keep buying stuff in the game. It's a very, very popular title anyway, and a very high-quality one. But this year is the first one under its new owners, Microsoft, who acquired the company behind it, Activision Blizzard, for $75 billion, a huge amount of money. And not only is this game apparently a very good one, and it's a very high-quality one that's coming out, it's also going to go into the Game Pass subscription service, so people will be able to access their game a lot more cheaply than they have been able to before.
What do you think success would look like for Microsoft and Activision?
It's a good question. I think what they'll be looking for, Microsoft will obviously be looking to drive sales of their Game Pass or subscribers to their Game Pass subscription service. There's a lot of estimates on what this might do. We're talking 2.5 million, maybe even 4 million new subscribers to that service, which will be a really big boost to them. At the same time, that is obviously going to have an impact upon the sales of the game. But overall, I think they're going to take that hit and they're going to accept that hit because they will want to drive people into that subscription service. An interesting thing about this game as well is that historically it had a partnership with PlayStation, which is the rival to Xbox, and PlayStation had a marketing partnership, used to be able to get the stuff, the extra stuff they released about the game afterwards, used to get it in the game first on PlayStation. That's not the case this time, so that's going to be a bit of a different thing. You might see some players play this on Xbox over PlayStation this time.
We've seen trailers for Call of Duty Black Ops 6, which look massive. Just give a sense of scale for how big this launch is.
Oh, yeah, this is very, very comparable to Hollywood launches. And you're looking at, you know, billions of dollars, right? You're talking billions of dollars in money that's about on these games. You mean, games are more expensive than going to the cinema, obviously. They cost $70 premium titles. But let's be clear, those games are going to be massive. The real big one is next year with Grand Theft Auto 6. Grand Theft Auto 5 is the biggest entertainment product, any movie, any album, any book, any game ever. And the sequel comes out next year. So that's going to be on another scale like we've ever seen before. Call of Duty's a massive scale, though. It is going to be the biggest launch of the year.
With these huge launches comes a lot of pressure for the companies behind them and investors. Is there more pressure these days than there has been in the past?
There's been a lack of growth in video games. Lots of people played video games during the pandemic. There were lockdown that caused an awful lot of popularity around video games at that point in time. Since then, obviously, people have been going outside. They've been going to gigs and going to the park and doing other things other than play video games. And that's impacted the growth in the games industry. It's one of the negatives about video games this year. There's been a lot of layoffs in games as they're trying to compensate for this decline. And that puts an awful lot of pressure on this. And there's no guarantees anymore. We just had a big game come out only a month ago, Star Wars Outlaws, pretty good game, big brand, didn't do what everyone expected of it, and it's caused the company behind it, Ubisoft, to issue a bit of a warning and having to delay some things. So it's no guarantee of success. Everyone's going to try and work very, very hard in order to deliver it. And this year's Call of Duty, we don't really know how well it's going to do because of that subscription element.
Massive thanks to Andrew Rogers and all the team at BBC Newsbeat who helped us out from a busy day there at the EGX conference. And you heard Chris Dring there, the head of games industry at Biz, talking to Andrew Shanti. Pressure was a phrase that came up a couple of times there. When you bet the farm, as Microsoft did a bit here, $75 billion worth of bet, there is a bit of pressure, isn't there?
Yeah, and each of these games costs billions, can cost up to $1 billion to make in many years. I think the interesting thing here is how they're trying to manage the subscriptions. They're doing things where they're introducing different tiers of offerings, taking some games away from people, giving access elsewhere. And it's kind of like what's happening in the streaming world, where you see different tiers with and without advertising. And I think there's a bit of experimentation to see what consumers will, what will they tolerate? What model will they want to use for these games?
Yeah, absolutely. If you didn't pick up that up in that chat between Andrew and Chris Dring then, that was when they were referencing Microsoft Game Pass, if it's not available where you are yet. That's what they were talking about there. Look ahead to next week for Ashanti. It's absolutely massive, both sides of the Atlantic, because we've got the budget here in the UK that's going to be a pretty controversial one, first one for a new government, and also all those tech results, as you mentioned as well. Going to be a busy week for you.
Yep, and hopefully we've got the Bank of Japan, where, they caused a bit of a stir when they changed interest rates in August, but no change expected this time. We'll also get information about payrolls in the U.S. that can move things around. And in addition to those big techs, we've got Eli Lilly, which is one of the companies that's involved in the weight loss drugs. So we might find out a bit more about how that sector is evolving. And then companies that just give you a lot of information about the general economy, like Visa, how much people are spending, McDonald's, and companies like Caterpillar, not really known to the public, but lots of machinery. They can often tell you how industrials and factories are doing. So we'll get lots of information.
And a relief for both me and you that we might not have to try and explain the yen carry trade then as a result with the Bank of Japan as well next week, which is always a good start to a new business week. Shanti, great to have your company. As always, Shanti Kellerman there of M&G Wealth, bringing us to the end of this edition of World Business Report.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast, and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.